Alex, welcome back.
Jim, great to be here. And can I say again, I love our intro music so much.
I haven't talked about this a ton, but the intro music was composed by a longtime friend of mine, one of the most creative people I know, a fellow named Salim. And my favorite part about it is that he composed this and recorded it while on a Shinkansen. His wife is Japanese, and he's got his own family's Japanese as well. And so he composed this on a Shinkansen in Japan. And it just, that fact just makes me so delighted. And also, I actually love what he came up with. I feel like it's very atmospheric and, you know, it's got good vibes. So I'm super excited that you love it too.
Yeah, it's very post city pop. You know, you get that kind of Shinkansen mindset. You know, the last time I rode one, I struggled to stream an NBA game for no reason. I should have had Shinkansen mindset. I clearly didn't. And that was the error of my ways.
I do. I like that idea because it really is a mindset. All of a sudden you look up and it's just like, yeah, you're cruising through the countryside at 350 kilometers an hour. And boy, what an experience. Alex, do you have any sports headlines for us as we get started, as we always do with the app for sports and clearly the topic that everyone is tuning in for, our take on sports?
Well, it's July, so not much is going on in the wide world of sports. My local LA WNBA team just traded away Kelsey Plum. That's kind of a bummer. Not sure what they were thinking, but they'll get somebody good in exchange from Phoenix, I believe. So we'll see if that improves their fortunes because they keep missing the playoffs. World Cup hangover hitting pretty hard. Gotta say, like, I'm really missing being able to watch like 4 hours of soccer every day. That was really nice. I think I'm working more to make up for it, you know, for better and worse. But not a lot going on. And the Mets continue to engage in what I think is basically arson fraud in lieu of an actual rebuild, which after all is a tri-state area tradition. Right?
Oh, totally.
If you want to evict somebody, but you don't know how to do it, you burn your house down. And that's New York.
Burn the building down.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a bit more of a casual sports fan than you are, and I was struggling a little bit because as you mentioned, the doldrums of July and August here, and I was like, what are we going to talk about? But then the LeBron trade happened, I was like, well, this breaks containment, and I don't know if folks know, but I do have a personal connection to Philadelphia. My wife is from there, and I find myself in Philadelphia more than I think I ever would have imagined I would. So I've got a little bit of a connection to Philly. He says there was a headline, I don't know how true this is, that he's going to helicopter from New York.
He's going to commute. Yeah, he's going to be an I-95 commuter.
Oh, boy.
Which is an interesting choice for this late in life. It's like no more worlds to conquer.
Yeah.
But you can't really imagine Alexander the Great being like, all right, let's see how the Amtrak's going today.
Yeah.
You know, like, they canceled 3 out of 4 trains. That's a bummer.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I do like that idea of him being on. Is that the Acela line?
The Acela. I mean, that's a reasonably good one. Like Philly to New York is pretty reliable service.
It's like the DC to Boston line is basically the only good train line. Speaking of Shinkansen and futures that we just won't be imagined here in the land of the free.
Well, you never know. I mean, we'll get more rail funding at some point. We'll build half a train and be pretty excited about it. I believe the California high-speed rail is on the verge of running from Fresno to Bakersfield.
Yeah, exactly.
Just look forward to it. That'll be great.
The bustling metropoli of southern to northern California there.
All right,
excellent. Well, let's get into it. I'm looking at my list here, and we don't always talk about things that are related to the app or Blue Sky, the company, but I think there was one that kind of lit up a little bit. Have you made it all the way through Tony's interview with The Verge yet?
I sure have. Yeah. I really enjoyed that, and they do a nice job on their transcripts too, which helps.
Yeah, I thought that one came out really, really well. Props to our comms team for setting that one up. And, you know, the thing that struck me is that Tony really talked up the atmosphere, the protocol. I would say that this guy gets it. And that was one of the things when he was, I think folks know that Tony spent a few months as our interim CEO before now he's full time. And that was one of the things that struck me immediately in some of the conversations that I was able to have. And even just, you know, as he was able to kind of talk around and and try to figure out what was going on with the company, he seemed to really understand the protocol immediately, which I think augurs really well for the work that we do.
Absolutely. I'm very happy having a permanent CEO. I really have enjoyed all my work with Tony. I enjoyed going down to SF for one of our local meetups at the True Ventures office that he helps run a few months back. And it's nice to see so many notes that we hit echoed, you know, in this Verge piece, because that was the front page of the Verge all day long. That feels pretty good. And for the couple of like minor, I think, sort of points of friction people had with the interview, like, for example, talking about like Blue Sky's algorithm and how we frame that, I was also really encouraged that some really constructive discussion came out of that right away. Like, I know community member Lawrence Hoff of Connected Places mentioned, like, it's really not the case that Blue Sky doesn't have an algorithm.
Yeah.
But this is like a durable thing that people seem to hook onto, right? And just because, like, we're not TikTok, right? It's not like we're forcing you into an algorithmic feed. Just because the Discover feed is not the way that every single person engages with the platform and doesn't have to engage with the platform doesn't mean there's no algorithms here. But it does mean that, like, in terms of how that comes out for a lay understanding, it is different. And I'm really happy to see people negotiate that and sort of find points of contention where they can help have that conversation on Blue Sky.
Exactly. I think so much of our lives here within the company, but also on the Atmosphere team and working with our amazing App Proto community, is all about living inside of those tensions. And the algorithm thing and the feeds are such a great example of that right there in the app, because it's been a selling point from day one. We don't have these black box algorithms that are driving the feed, like basically every other centralized social media app. But also that means that if you want a different feed experience, you have to go find it or create your own. And we're working, like, I know the product team is working on some ways in and around that, but yeah, you're absolutely right. It absolutely creates a real tension within the product.
And we're not naive about millions of users, like, implicitly express preference for default, right? Like, that's one of those things that's just sort of established in this application space. And it has implications both for the regulatory environment and for the UX that we present. So, you know, it's one thing for us to really firmly say at every possible opportunity, we care about user choice, right? Like, we are not designing this so that way you can tell us every single thing that's wrong with the feed. We want to make sure we teach you to fish. And what that comes out feeling like to a lot of people is Blue Sky isn't forcing an algorithm on you, right? It's not that Blue Sky doesn't have an algorithm per se. There are algorithms that are beyond feeds themselves, of course, too, right? Like, there's technically the way we decide, like, how to show a muted post. Like, that's still an algorithm in some sense, right? So the lay understanding of algorithm with respect to the platform obviously changes a lot based on the conversation. And I am not unhappy with how it came out.
Yep. Yeah. Agree. You know, on that note, I'll just throw in a little bit more news from Blue Sky, the company, but there was a bit of a relaunch of Addy, our AI service and application that works with the protocol. I think the big news is that we added this new feature that we call Quests. You know, previously, you were able to generate feeds, and now you can interact with the entire ecosystem using some of these AI tools. You know, another kind of entry point into the great wide big world of the Atmosphere, but using some of using some of these AI tools to help you navigate that. I really like what we're trying to do with Addy. I think the framing is, don't use AI to fill your feeds with slop. Again, I think that's a big differentiator from basically all of the other centralized platforms, but use these AI tools to help you make sense of all the things that's happening on it. I use Addy every day. I've got some custom feeds set up to help me see all the amazing stuff that's launching and happening. So are you a big Addy user, Alex?
Yeah, Quests, I think, are a really big deal. And Quests have been like the vast majority of my internal usage of Addy for quite some time. It's like the feeds use case is well established, well understood. It's like, we know, we were just talking about like what's a feed look like, it's algorithmic sorting, et cetera, but being able to pipe the results of a query and actually action it, that's, you know, Unix philosophy 101.
Right.
It's also like a big expansion of what was previously possible with AI tools on the network. one thing that we always talk about as being like a really cool differentiator for Blue Sky is just being able to have access to all of that data, right? Yep. Like data warehousing, that's a differentiator for us. We're pretty good at providing a data plane for all of the records on AppProto, whatever they actually resemble, whatever you want to do with them. So being able to get from a filter to an action massively increases the usable surface of Addy. And I think it's here where we're actually going to see that bet start to pay off and bear out.
The Addy team is cooking. We've hired a few folks, really excited. And, you know, Jay was transitioning from her role and now leading the exploration team. So lots of great stuff coming there. I got to give a quick shout out, Brittany Alec, who new hire on that team and is doing some really great work. She put together a Jimothy explainer. And Jimothy, I have a soft spot in my heart for Jimothy for maybe obvious reasons, but I'm going to drop the Jimothy explainer into chat here. For everyone who is not familiar with what's going on with Jimothy, or maybe doesn't live in the Seattle area, any good Jimothy memes make it your way?
You know, it reminded me a little bit. Do you remember Petals the Bear from New Jersey, who was a bipedal bear because he'd gotten, this is actually kind of a sad story, his front paws had been hurt in a trap when he was younger. So he was a bear who lived in North Jersey who would just run around people's backyards fully upright. And like Jimothy, like your first response is like, oh, that animal should not be moving like that. But he was really quite adorable.
Oh.
And, you know, he'd kind of just be like strolling around like the Wolfman. Because it turns out bears can run upright with enough practice.
Amazing.
Right? And so Jimothy to me feels like a callback to Petals. That's also the kind of thing that, you know, speaking of Addy's value here, AI is very good at sense making. It's very good at like, hey, like explain to me what's happening on the network. Like the business intelligence use case of like, what are people talking about and like what's getting surfaced up. That value is clearly very high for this. And it's one of those things, I think it's just a matter of time until like the rest of the internet realizes just how high value these sense-making aspects of Addy running on the AppProto network are. I guarantee I could get Claude to draw some favorable comparisons between Petals and Jimothy.
Amazing. Amazing. I love it. You know, that sense-making part is so true and so kind of vital. I do feel like we maybe we haven't quite tipped over into that, but I feel like there's enough conversation. I think that Verge article spawned some back and forth between people around, like we absolutely do want more culture, more basically things that are not political news. So more sports, more like all of the niche things that exist in other places. We clearly want more of that. But I do feel like we've kind of hit that tipping point where if there's a thing that's happening in the world, it, you know, I can remember it wasn't that long ago that if I were searching for something I just kind of heard about on Blue Sky, I wouldn't necessarily get it. But, you know, these days I can get a headline, I can get people talking about it. And that feels exciting. And so having some of these sense making tools built into that really helps.
Yeah. TMZ on Blue Sky, you know, like
exactly.
We've made it.
Yeah. You know, and speaking of sense making, so one of my favorite of the atmospheric sense making apps is Symbol. And one of the things they launched is, they launched an MCP server. And so you can now plug your Claude, whatever your AI tools are, into Symbol. And then you can essentially query the Symbol network, with your AI tools. And so that's kind of like, you know, very similar to, I guess, kind of what we're doing with Addy, but in a much more sort of constrained way, but also with your own tool chain, if that's something you've built out.
Yeah. I'd love to see more, like, I think, actual case studies in just how useful these tools are, because my estimation is that they are just like completely changing the game for any kind of sense-making use case you might have, right? Just being able to be like, what's going on here? And I think because the AI space has run ahead in some ways of the actual like closing the loop ROI aspects of this, like I think maybe we've got to put more out there, honestly, too, just in terms of like, here's how you can use this for X, you know, like this fits directly into your workflow. It's a drop-in replacement for thing Y, but really great to see. And I can't wait to see more of it and just more production use cases.
That's the algebraic X, not X, the other place.
Oh yeah, sorry. No, I don't even. I still call that place. Twitter for, I think, mostly good and bad reasons, just to disambiguate.
All right, so moving through our list here. We wrapped up some of the travel. Folks were on the road. Thankfully, you and I were kind of staying put, which is maybe not the DevRel lifestyle that we've always aspired to, but I was happy to spend July at home. We've mentioned this before. Our own Daniel Holmgren and Paul Frazee were out at the DWeb conference, which was then followed up by the Local First conference. And so Paul's talk from Local First, he actually kind of put together on his blog a version of that. He's been doing some LinkedIn posting. So if you're on LinkedIn, follow Paul Frazee. I think this is new to him. He would love the support. I haven't been giving him a hard time about that at all. But his talk from Local First landed pretty well. And so give that a read if you were not at Local First. And then, of course, the IETF meeting happened. And Brian kind of reemerged from his, I think, soon-to-be-ending sabbatical. I miss that guy. I'm excited to get him back.
Imminently, actually. Brian just shared with me he's going to be heading out to New York for the leaflet at Proto NYC event at Rutgers Center in like 2.5 weeks. And I thought that was going to be out of band during his sabbatical, but he is officially back by then.
So right on.
Talk, Brian.
Yeah. Amazing.
Very soon.
Getting back in it with a bang. Just come back to work, fly across the country, and hang out with some folks. So if you're in the New York area and you have not yet signed up for the at Proto, I believe it's the at Proto Community Day is the official title, sponsored by our friends at Leaflet, then you're going to want to get to that. But Brian and Daniel presented at the IETF meeting, and the recording from that, I think last time we met, that meeting was imminent or was, hours away. It's happened, and there's actually a recording. It sounds like it went really, really well. All of the feedback was really great. And, I had it kind of on in the background. It seemed like everybody was really supportive. It seemed like the biggest issue was the fact that currently AT URIs are not compliant with the URI spec. I believe we suggested that maybe the spec should change, but I don't think that went over super well.
That was a nice 2-week period where we thought, maybe.
They might do it.
Yeah, that's no longer on the table. You know, it's a bummer, obviously, because I know that we really love to be very spec-driven here and to be able to say, like, hey, they're compliant URIs is one of those things that's, like, very philosophically aligned. And the fact that, we maybe have slightly misparsed that spec will be annoying, but it's not going to be a showstopper. I think there's been a few ideas batted around for how we can reconcile these and have a backwards compatible legacy at URI syntax that's not a real URI, and then one that is forward compatible. So a bit of a paper cut, but nothing too terrible. And honestly, I just enjoy watching those IETF streams because everybody in the room has a real appreciation for the process and a sense of humor about it.
Yeah, totally.
And it's a nice thing to send off our teammates and colleagues to do. Much like LeBron going to Philly, makes you want to trust the process.
Yeah. I love that. Well, and Eli, who I see is on the stream here, he presented in support of the work that we're doing. We had a few community folks in the room, including Eli. And I think Eli was also talking about some of the work that StreamPlace is going to be doing to build on top of the protocol. So really appreciate that support from everybody who, I know we had a few folks tuning in and folks that participate on the email lists. Just a reminder that this is an open process. One thing I really appreciate about the IETF is that it is really, like, really focused on the standards themselves. And I know, like, we were talking about the URI spec. I think, whoever it is that owns the current URI spec showed up and was like, look, you're not actually going to miss your slashes that much. And it became a pretty fun joke for us internally. Some other projects that we've been keeping an eye on. So friend of the stream here, Erin Kassay, if you haven't caught her conversation from a few weeks back, do go check that out. But Erin Kassay is launching, and this is just, I love Kassay's blog post about this. It's so Kassay-y. She's working with a few folks. We here at Blue Sky were happy to offer some monetary support. I know that folks at the Raft Foundation, I saw Black Sky chimed in. But she's calling her project a Cloud Atlas, which again, like, cannot think of a better name for kind of a survey of all of the apps in the atmosphere. I don't think she's going to be looking at every single one of them. She's going to be talking with folks and really kind of coming up with a broad categorization of projects that are happening in the atmosphere. This is going to be hugely helpful for the work that you and I do. I know you and I have probably sat down and attempted versions of this. I think my first week on the job, I was like, just let me put all of the apps into a category. And I did a very naive 4x4 grid thing or 2x2 grid, and quickly realized it was out of my depth. So
yeah, this is something that we keep sort of running up to and then backing away slowly. The idea of trying to have like any kind of canonical list of atmosphere apps for promotional purposes. Yeah. And what I've found myself doing more and more often, especially as part of the very soon to ship docs update that I think has disappeared for a couple of weeks here for good reason that I'm about to bring back into everyone's lives. But when I made that, when I've made other recent like new explainers, it's just as useful to cherry pick some popular lexicons from across the network, some popular apps, and then be able to present the idea of, you know, different views on the same data and having, you know, a backend that you can build out and a front end you can build out and so on. And that's not exactly the same thing as building out like a comprehensive cloud atlas, which is community maintained, which I'm really excited to see develop. And in part, that's just because, like, this is a very fast-moving target, right? Like, in DevRel, I've seen, like, awesome lists come and go and things like that. And yeah, that's a nice thing to try to populate for any given moment in time. But maintainability is never really organic for something like that. And you don't want to just be picking winners every so often. And so being able to do this in a way that respects the organicity of it, I think, is the key element here. And I'm looking forward to seeing that happen.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And like I said, I don't think we could have picked a better person to do it. So really happy to support Erin in her work. And yeah, give that one a read. She's got an open collective available. So if this is something that's really important to you, I know other developers out there would benefit from something like this too. So if you've got a few dollars to throw towards this project, then don't be shy. Alex, I know you've been working on documenting some of the reference PDS improvements. You want to walk us through what's shipped and what's coming?
Yeah, so I think I'm going to cut a new reference PDS release tomorrow morning because we've managed to roll up a number of improvements all at the same time here, which is always exciting because you wind up having the conversation. It's like, do we block the release on this and this and this? Can we block it on all of them because they're all going to ship? And we've gotten ourselves into one of those nice situations this week where there's been a few mostly reference PDS improvements that I've been floating on the app in the last couple of weeks and getting a very nice positive reception to, I have to say. So thank you to everybody who engaged with me when I mentioned upgrading the default blob limit to 300 megs. This is something that our app team has asked for because they want to be able to support longer videos out of the box, just posting like 10-minute video to Blue Sky. This is also something that we had a bunch of internal conversation about because we talked about whether we should split videos up, whether we should allow lower bit rates, and whether we should give PDSs the ability to easily report back if their blob limit hasn't been raised, because of course, this is not part of the protocol. This is just a default parameter that gets installed with the reference PDS that you can tweak as you want to. So if you want to have like the big bad video PDS, that's totally in your rights to do so. If you only want to accept image size blobs, you can also do that. So we basically wound up discarding the idea of lower bit rates for longer videos. I want to make sure we're maintaining pretty high quality video as a default experience, at least on Blue Sky, the app. But we are bumping the reference PDS up to 300 meg blobs out of the gate, and we are providing the ability for it to report out on its own blob size limits in a more predictable way. So that way you can get a, you know, this PDS only supports blobs up to X size. Being able to split blobs might follow from that. That is work that we are not doing out of the gate, but that might follow on soon. So that's feature number one, is larger blob sizes. And I love thinking about video blobs, so that was a fun one to work on. Feature two coming tomorrow is OpenTelemetry OTEL endpoints added to the reference PDS, so that way it can share some basic performance metrics. You can see how busy your PDS is, how often people are authing to it, how often people are creating new accounts. And along with that being enabled upstream on the PDS distribution, we are also shipping some sample Grafana dashboards that provide those PDS-specific metrics side-by-side with typical host metrics like CPU and RAM and disk and so on. And as with most Grafana distributions, like, you're under no obligation to use our sample dashboard, but that helps to contextualize it. You can get it with like a two-line Docker deploy out of the gate, the same way you're currently setting up our reference PDS. We've got new docs coming tomorrow that will also show a way of shipping those Grafana dashboards along with it. So you can opt into the monitoring stack, or you can use those OTEL endpoints to integrate with your own existing monitoring so that if you are running like a high-scale PDS environment, which we at Blue Sky are currently,
yep,
you'll be able to then benefit from these OTEL endpoints and wire them up to your alerts or anything else you might want to have access to at a glance. That's PDS feature number two. Feature number three, also shipping tomorrow, is improved auth flow with the ability to customize what people are seeing when they auth to your PDS.
Love it.
So we're adding configurable banner images. We're adding a few more params that you can tweak just in terms of like background color and other CSS type features. And we're improving the UX of that flow a little bit at the same time. That way you can do a bit more to style your own PDS. And of course, we're always interested in streamlining like the Atmosphere login use case. There's going to be more work following not long after this to improve the whole narrative and the sample expectations for atmospheric login. All three of these feature categories have happened to land at enough of the same time that they're all going into the same PDS release, which will be tomorrow unless I am incapacitated. And I'm very excited to share that. Thanks again, everyone, for engaging when I started to share some of these designs around. We've also got another big feature release that we're rolling up for next week that I'll be ready to talk about then. And you can probably guess what it is because I hinted about it a couple of weeks ago.
Excellent. Love all of that. The response in the chat is great. Kuba and Scott in particular, thanks so much for your support. So Kuba is requesting a describe repo section for things like the blob limits and stuff like that. So I think we've had periodic requests for that. Looking through our release here, so we've got a few that kind of broadly fit into the category of new releases. We'll just kind of rip through here. There's now officially a Black Sky mobile app for both iOS and Android. So those apps are available as official apps, not just web apps or PWAs or anything like that. So that's very exciting. And congrats to the team at Black Sky for getting that shipped. No mean feat to ship. I mean, even just going through the App Store processes alone is enough to drive someone to the brink of insanity there.
It's also a really nice like credibility signifier for people to just be able to get up and running with the app. It's one of those things where it's like, obviously, like, philosophically, we don't want to make everything about app stores and gatekeeping and third-party package management, which is basically what the app store is. It's just a glorified package manager, right? But it's a nice sign. Like, yeah. I love this whenever our community applications go through these hoops because it is just such a show of confidence and accessibility to do it. So I don't want to minimize like how important this is. However you might feel about an open web, like, this is a really big deal and it's great for them.
Agree.
Yeah.
We do have a question here from Fry69 who wants to know why they can post long videos but not a 30 to 90 minute long audio podcast. This is a fantastic question that is very germane to our interests. And you know what, Fry, we're gonna look into this to figure out what we can do about making audio maybe a little bit of a first class citizen. Everything is video now, so I suspect that it's not so much a nefarious scheme as it is just got to prioritize somewhere. So
yeah, that's just obviously some kind of MIME type gating that we use for the app flow, right? Because the app is designed to serve video.
Yeah.
Blobs are arbitrary. That's why they're blobs. There's nothing restricting, you know, like what can be in a blob at the protocol level. We just don't have first class application support for audio without video. And that's definitely something the app team can look at some point, I think.
Yeah. So encode all your audio as video. Problem solved. Let's see here. A few other releases. We mentioned last time that there was a Tangled CLI. There's a new one, TNG. So this one appears to be written in Swift, if I got that one correct. But so that's pretty exciting. Always cool to see more more CLIs coming for Tangled and more just interfaces to work with Tangled. I think obviously a huge success story on the protocol there.
That prompted me to check to see if there is a DS9 CLI that exists. And there is, though I can't tell what it does. It seems like it's some scientific computing library for like signal processing.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah. I guess that tracks. All right, let's see here. And PDS Dad, everyone's favorite, Bailey Townsend. This is a cool project. I've never been much of an Excalidraw user. Bailey took Excalidraw being kind of like the open source, web-based, peer-to-peer communal drawing application and made it at ProtoNative, which is super cool. And even came up with just like a chef's kiss name for it, Lexidraw. You know, all of us nerds who are familiar with the way the protocol works, including lexicons, I think we were all appreciative of that. But, you know, it's something that extends beyond that. You know, a part that I didn't realize until I was actually doing a little bit of research for this show, it uses Iroh for the P2P bits, which Iroh, I know there was a lot of talk with the folks at DWeb and at Local First. Iroh, they recently hit their 1.0, is that right? At some point this summer?
I believe so.
And so just a lot of, you know, not any explicit ties between the protocol and what they're doing over there in Iroh land to try to, you know, replace IP addresses, I guess, but just like a lot of synchronicity. So I expect that there will be a lot of kind of continued communal engagement. But yeah, Bailey used Iroh for that, which is, man, that guy. Can't say enough great things about Bailey.
Yeah, this is one of a couple projects in the last week I saw that was just nuts. And I was like, wow, what do you mean you did this? Like, yeah. That's unbelievably cool. The other one that I have in our show notes here somewhere, community developer Scott Lano, who goes by Scooty on Blue Sky, showed me last week their Graphene OS fork that is entirely at proto account driven. So basically the entire OS, which is an Android alternative that can run on a phone that I think is primarily web app driven, basically has, you know, an app screen that is a bunch of atmospheric apps that just uses the app proto account, like in the system account menu, to be able to auth to each of those. And the whole thing is working. Like, it's unbelievably cool. Just as, I mean, like, and that's one of those things I know was just going to get people excited when they see it. Like, there's a certain kind of developer who you see that and like, you put them in an fMRI machine and their entire brain is exploding, where it's just like, whoa, what do you mean? And so even as a proof of concept or whatever, it's just like does so much hearts and minds work in terms of how the protocol can function. So huge shout out both to Bailey and to Scott for just like really running wild in the past few weeks. Like, love to see this stuff. Want to make sure it gets the widest possible audience.
So the idea there is instead of signing in with your iPhone, with your Apple account or your Android phone, with your Google account, you can sign in to Graphene, which, as you mentioned, is kind of this open source fork of Android. And you use your app proto account for everything, which, man, I also think that's just such a great kind of explainer. Like, even just, you know, as we went through right now, you know how you have to sign in your iPhone with your Apple account? What if you didn't have to do that?
And again, that's one that lands for a lot of people. Just going back to what we talked about at the top of the show, like the algorithm discourse, right? It's like algorithm doesn't always mean algorithm the same way nanometer doesn't always mean nanometer. Like, a lot of this stuff in tech at this point is kind of shorthand for a more complicated thing, right? And these are really salient conceptual categories. People who care about, you know, data sovereignty and all the stuff that we care about in this community. So I think these are really attention getting in the best possible way.
Completely agree. And Scott's actually in the chat here and mentioned that got some good feedback that we don't even need a full Graphene fork. We can use stock Android ROMs and credential managers to accomplish a lot of the same things. So that's cool. So you could, in theory, you know, just have a base Android app or a base Android install and build on top of that.
See if my XDA developers account still works from like 2012 when I last tried to root my phone.
All right. Well, a few other items here. Dan Abramov, who, as we mentioned last time, makes your job and my job that much easier with all of his fantastic at Proto Explainers. He has been on a tear. I feel like my podcast listening has been nothing but at Proto lately, which I'm very excited about. But he had a couple of appearances, one on Syntax FM, which is Wes Bose's kind of more web dev, JavaScript-oriented show. But they had Dan on, and I really loved the framing of this. The title was The Open Web Gets a Second Chance, and they had Dan on, and Dan, of course, did his song and dance. And then he was also on a show that was new to me, UIT Inside, which is from, it's typically a Japanese language podcast, but they did it in English. And it's from the parent company of Line, the messaging app, which is huge in Japan. Because I don't come from like the React ecosystem, I'm always reminded of what kind of like a rock star is, Dan is, in particular segments of the web dev ecosystem. And so, you know, in both of these appearances, it was like, we've got Dan Abramov, which was great to hear, because we know him as like at Proto Explainer extraordinaire, but he's obviously got a lot more cachet too, beyond just at Proto, which is great and super helpful, because I think there's a lot of folks who would be interested in the protocol. They just don't know it yet. And so folks like Dan getting out there and advocating our behalf are obviously hugely helpful.
It's massively appreciated. Yeah. I mean, neither you nor I really come from like React or web dev land, right? Which is like, I sit down, I'm like, I kind of know the shape of it. It's like, yeah, I'll write you some TypeScript, whatever. Yeah, you stay shadow dumb, he eats my soul, whatever. Like, and that's all good to know. And it is really nice to be in these spaces. It's something I think we're generally aware of, like that there is a big TypeScript developer community that's maybe still posting more on LinkedIn or on other platforms that like hasn't wholeheartedly come on to Blue Sky, but we can see so much to appeal to them in at Proto specifically, in terms of just how you think about web components, like how you do your backends and being able to get that sort of thing for free. One of those beats we like to hit in talking about like why use at Proto for your app, even if you don't care about microblogging, for example. So Every time Dan pops up, it's just hugely, hugely helpful. It's a great class in how to talk about this stuff and how to appeal to TypeScript developers.
Yeah, completely agree. So, and then wrapping things up here, as usual, we have a standing segment for our friends at Standard Site. So the folks over at Leaflet launched an ability to embed kind of random HTML into your Leaflet posts. And they even kind of came up with, I saw some chatter about how are you doing this and keeping it secure? Jared and Miguel from Offprint were kind of going back and forth on this. And so, of course, it's all kind of sandboxed within the browser. So, and then
MDX as a service. Yeah. Like that. I am a React developer.
There you go. Nice. Well, and then immediately people started just dumping all kinds of random stuff into it. So super fun to see some of those examples. And then one that I actually thought was pretty interesting. Hillary Bauman wrote a really nice, like, what is Standard Site Explainer? And I liked her framing as kind of next generation RSS. And we get into trouble sometimes with people who have a vested interest in keeping RSS as it is. But I really enjoyed this explainer a lot too. So, you know, another good one for if you need to get out there and explain what Standard Site is. And then I think that kind of wraps up. Just as a reminder, you know, we always love seeing all of the events. I think last night there was the PDX event happening. I saw some photos from, I recognized the space, and then I was just like, oh, that's right. They do that in the Code TV studio. Yeah. And saw some familiar faces there, including a friend of the stream, Aaron Kassane, made it down. And then the NYC Community Day is a few weeks away. And then as always, check the atmosphere.community for an event happening near you. Anything else that we missed? We did have a question here that came in. This was actually a really interesting question going back to the Verge interview. So there was a lot of fuss about the Verge's video. How are you going to ensure that new communities join here? For example, to get the football community here, you need football, and they mean soccer, what we call soccer here in the States, and leagues posting messages that isn't happening at the moment. I know this is top of mind for our partnerships and our apps team. We're more kind of concerned with bringing some of those folks in. Alex, I know you had a couple of thoughts on this.
I do. I've actually got quite complex thoughts on this because I think there's quite a few aspects to saying, you know, like, okay, we want more sports talk to be happening on Blue Sky. That way everyone isn't just sort of, you know, blowing a gasket talking about politics at all times.
Yeah.
And for my part, I absolutely agree with this. Like, I think when I was joining, that was something that even I emphasized is like, hey, I like this app, not because I necessarily want to hear from people who I explicitly disagree with politically, but because I want to talk about something else some of the time, right? Yeah. And that's really what I think diversifying the conversation is more about. It's not like artificial viewpoint diversity. It's like, hey, we're all well-rounded people. We have hobbies. And for me, and again, speaking as somebody who sought out this job to work on this platform, I get a lot of the tech conversation that I want to be having. Again, like we just talked about, like I'm not like a dyed-in-the-wool React person, but I get to have a lot of other interesting conversations about open source, about what's going on in the self-hosting world. So like a lot of the tech discourse is there for me.
Yep.
Similarly, a lot of the sports discourse is there for me already because I am someone who is inclined to support, you know, worker-owned journalism like Defector. I'm a big fan of ESPN's Mina Kimes, who has been a big user of the platform day one. And that is obviously a subset of sports discourse, and it's not what 100% of the global sports audience is necessarily looking for. And it's probably true that part of this is getting more brands on the platform and getting, you know, organizations like soccer clubs to actually just post their regular news updates on Blue Sky like they would have been doing on Insta or on Twitter a decade ago, right? And so just getting the actual club and the club's long-suffering PR person who loves to get yelled at for their terrible trades actually manning the post is a big part of obviously feeling like you have like a platform that has a commercial interest by all these different clubs.
Yeah.
But in terms of just being able to go and post and talk about sports and know that you're going to find an audience for like complaining about the World Cup, we already have that. And I think it's really interesting, like what the going from A to B really looks like right there, right? It's like we have the chatter, we have the engaged commenters. We don't have all the brands themselves in every case yet. Yeah. And that, I think, that gives me what I want. Like, I don't need to go yell at the actual Mets and be like, why did you do this? Totally. I just want to talk to, like, 30 other depressives who follow the Mets and be like, why did they do this? But like, there's something there for sure.
Yeah.
And I think figuring out how we get from, like, less of a self-selecting elite opinion sort of a sports demographic to like an everyone's here sports demographic, that's something our partnerships team is really focused on. But it's a really interesting question in terms of you think about, you know, like who was on social media and why and what are they getting out of it? And then what are the audience expectations in turn develop into from there?
Such good points, every one of them. And I think that one thing a lot of folks don't always realize, I think you and I have been on the other side of this a few times, even here, is that oftentimes in order to get those official clubs on board or at the league level, there are high dollar exchanges that are happening. What does Twitter pay to the NFL or to the MLB to have all of the teams on Twitter? Is it a six? Is it a nine figure sum? You know, those are the kinds of things that we can't quite justify at this point. And so it does, it is a little bit more kind of bottom up. It is a little bit more indie kind of voice of the crowd and a little bit less of the kind of the official top level line of things. And that's probably not going to change anytime soon. We're probably not going to be paying the NFL millions of dollars to have every club on the app just yet. You know, I think seeing more and more of that conversation happening over here, I think is, and then, you know, going back to, there was a great post about building a sports app on App Proto and what that might look like. And like, again, if you want the official scores and if you want them instantly, then that's a huge investment, right? So you have to officially license that data from the leagues, and that's not cheap, and they're not at all interested in giving any of that stuff away. So a lot of it does come down to money at the end of the day too.
There's a lot there, you know, like people who do tech, not in the tech industry, are often not having the same conversations as we are. And that's to everybody's detriment because so much of like good quality DevRel and developer evangelism happens because there's two or three people like at some random org at Manchester City, at Taco Bell, you know, like anywhere else who are like, hey, we like this product. We like this open source project. We have the latitude to be able to adopt it internally. And that's how you actually grow your developer base, right? Yep. Is because like your product was good enough for the people doing tech outside of tech to be like, this is for real. Like, let's get some PM onto it and see what they make of it. So the more that this platform appeals to the tech people at Manchester City, the better. Yeah. And I do think that we've got a lot of margin and room to grow there.
Yep. Yeah, completely agree. My favorite developers to talk to at my previous job were the internal engineering team at Home Depot. And huge organization. I mean, thousands of developers. And they're responsible for, you know, the fact that you can go to Home Depot, you can pull up the app, and it can tell you not only which aisle and which bay within that aisle, the fasteners that you're looking for, but they could tell like how many there are. And although I ran into this problem the other day, they told me that there were 24 boxes of the 3-inch screws I was looking for, and there were zero. So it
didn't always work out. Betrayed by the fastener mechanism.
But it's the only time that's ever happened. And you know, I can now come up with my shopping list. I can know exactly what aisle to go to. And that's like, we think of technology as like AI or, you know, VR things or whatever, but so much of our lives is just like those marginal little improvements. Well, that seems like a great note to end it. Thanks everybody for showing up on the stream. Really appreciate it as always. And we'll be back. We've got some exciting streams coming up. We've got some special guests coming up. We're going to have a couple, you know, we'll keep with our usual biweekly cadence, and then we'll drop the conversations. I've got some really exciting conversations coming up too. Really excited for those to drop. Quick programming note on that. Tim Biggin, I don't know if he's on the stream or not, had requested some way to kind of disambiguate between the live stream recordings and the kind of pre-recorded bits. And so now you can do that. You can go to the Off Protocol homepage and filter to your heart's content. So thanks, Tim, for pushing on that one. Really appreciate it. And thanks for noticing. So
yeah, if you ask for stuff, we might do it.
Yeah,
good lesson.
Exactly. All right. Thanks, everyone. Thanks so much for listening, and don't forget we live stream every other Wednesday on StreamPlace, of course. For more about App Protocol and an archive of this show, head to approto.com. Off Protocol is a production of the Blue Sky Developer Relations team. Our theme music was composed and produced by Salim Rushenwald.